8 years before Newton died, another Isaac, a dissident Protestant named Isaac Watts, published a book of psalm paraphrases and hymns. One of those has the following text, which I find quite haunting. "Time, what an empty vapor 'tis, and days, how swift they are, swift as an Indian arrow flies, or like a shooting star." For all its compelling simplicity, this view of time is too simple. Isaac Watts, like Isaac Newton, sees time as moving inexorably, linearly forward. Our first real inkling of trouble would not appear until the 19th century, and it would appear in the new science of thermodynamics. At the heart of thermodynamics are two ideas, two laws. The first law gives students little trouble, the idea that energy is conserved. But the second law is a huge obstacle, and I think that might be the result of discontent more than any complexity. For the second law says that order becomes disorder. It says that no spontaneous process can ever be completely undone. It tells us that the sun will eventually burn out and all living things will one day die. Mother Goose said it wonderfully well when she told about a broken egg. "Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall, Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again." You can see how the second law begins directing our attention toward time. It is rooted in the probability of molecular behavior, and it says nothing about individual molecules. The individual molecules are not bound by it. It comes about because vast numbers of molecules have to go from less probable arrangements to more probable ones. Our awareness of the world around us does not reach down to the scale of molecules. We're aware only of the behavior of large groups of molecules. The second law, therefore, mirrors human consciousness. As the second law follows probability to greater disorder, it becomes a companion to our subjective perceptions of order and disorder. It's been called time's arrow because we experience events only in one direction, just as Watts' hymn suggests. Yet two things tease at the back of our minds here. One is the fact that the behavior of individual molecules has no such temporal directionality. The other is that the true state of affairs is not quite so dreary as the second law first suggests. The less well-known principle of Le Chatelier and Brown limits the second law. It says that when natural processes go to greater disorder, they at least summon up resistance to their own completion. The best-known example is chemical reaction. The hotter a flame becomes, the less complete combustion will be. Instead of racing to completion, burning opposes its own action. Rust, likewise, tends to cover metals with protective coatings that slow the process of rusting. Spontaneous processes degrade things, but nature always invokes processes that retard degradation. Nature protects us. It slows and inhibits the inevitable. It grants us time. You've probably heard Shakespeare's invocation of the second law in his play Cymbeline. "Golden lads and girls all must, as chimney sweepers come to dust." We need to remember that our coming to dust is muted by the Le Chatelier-Brown principle. We can grow old gracefully. The second law aims time toward disorder and decay, but Le Chatelier and Brown tell us that time's arrow is slowed, that it is possible to sustain and enjoy a measure of beauty and order along the way. But not only is time a gentler taskmaster than it first seems, we also have that unresolved fact that time ceases to have meaning on the molecular level. There is clearly more to this than met either Isaac's eye. Let us next look more closely at the not-so-iron hand of time.